Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk about pets, baby. Let's talk about ticks and fleas. All the fun things that we see. Smart tips and tricks guaranteed.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of Let's Talk About Pets. I am your host, rising from the depths of legend and possibly a blanket fort with snacks. I'm Nessie.
And I'm Echo. I don't have a fun introduction. I never do.
Today we have a very special guest with us. She's a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Dermatology. It's Dr. Joya. You may know her from her hit TV show on National Geographic and Disney Plus, Pop Goes the Vet. She's a mother and a wife. She can do it all. We want to welcome Dr. Joya today.
Hi. Beer.
Now's your chance. Go ahead and brag about yourself to everybody.
Okay.
Well, I'm 5'1", but I pretend to be 5'2". I'm from Dayton, Ohio. And then, I went to Cornell for vet school and had the great opportunity to go back for residency. And I was trained there under Danny Scott, who is considered one of the forefathers of veterinary dermatology, which was a great honor for me. And then after residency, I stayed on to teach for a year. And then I joined Animal Dermatology Clinic about 15 years ago, which is crazy because time really flies. And I've loved working with the group. We're rapidly expanding, so there might be a clinic near you. And we just really have a great expertise in dermatology and helping pet parents help their pets to have, hopefully, itch-free lives.
Oh, man. Itch-free lives are amazing. It doesn't happen very much here in the South. I think every time I look at the schedule, we have a two-doctor practice right now. It used to be three. We're working on finding a third. Unless you're looking to move to Florida, hit me up, girl. So we're working on bringing a third back in, and always on the schedule, we're going to see at least two appointments per doctor that's going to be allergy related, whether it's ears or skin or feet licking.
Yes. I think they say like up to 50% of the cases you see in a given day in primary practice are ears and skin. So a lot.
Oh, wow.
Echo doesn't really have that problem. She works specialty pneumology, animal eyes.
I just have it with my personal pets.
Oh, yeah. It was skin and eyes a little bit. We see a lot of patients from our local ophthalmologist.
Yeah. I think we've sent like 4 cases in the last week to look in the ears to see if there's a middle ear infection.
Oh, videotoscopy.
That's the one. Yes. And EHSM have come back with like ruptured eardrums and like really bad stuff that have affected all the eyes.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because actually today we're all here. The happy ones. We're going to discuss some common ear issues with our pets and things you can look out for. Do you guys want to hear a fun fact about animal ears, dog ears?
Yeah.
Okay. Dogs can hear higher frequency sounds than people, and cats can hear higher frequency sound than dogs, and our pets use their ears to communicate how they're feeling. So you can tell a lot about how a pet feels and what their mood is like just by watching their ears.
Oh, it's cute how they carry their ears. Speaking of ears, I have a 14-year-old Lhasa Apso, and he's starting to lose his hearing, but he can still hear high frequency. So if I whistle at him or I talk real high, he can hear it. But my oldest boy has a kind of a low voice. The dog can't hear a single thing.
He's feeding himself.
He's the baby voice to talk to him.
Hey, you're the baby.
Yeah, well, and that's how you should be. My husband hates that when I use the baby voice. He's like, you can talk to them like a person. No, you can't.
No, they like the baby voice.
They do. They respond totally differently.
I'm going to start us off with a review. I thought it would be fun to review some ear products since today is an ear day. And I also thought they would be from characters that I find have big ears.
Okay.
So, great. I'll let Echo tell us who our first character is going to be from.
That's going to be Stitch from Lilo and Stitch.
Hi.
Oh, how?
Oh, cute.
He's got big ears for sure. So, gosh, I have one from, I'm going to tell you, I'm so excited about all of these. I don't know which one to start with. Okay. This is a product on Amazon called Triz Ear Flush, but it's like a, looks like an off-brand type bottle. It's a bottle, so a pretend Triz Flush. I got a one-star review from Stitch here that said that they were sent an unlabeled product. I received this product without a label or instructions for use. I will not be using this on my dog because I don't even know what this is. And here is the picture of the bottle.
Tasty.
Oh. Like, wow,
now there's no direction. So I'm not really sure what to do with it.
Or what this is. It could be water. It could just be water.
Water. Mm-hmm. Little Dawn dish open. They're like, here's your ear flow.
Yeah. That's a good choice not to use it, I feel like.
Yeah. I think I'd give it a little sniff first and just be like, this smells like ear cleaner, and then I would give it a try.
Would you taste your bray?
Oh, that was a good question.
I am on the side of things where I will taste things. Like the other day, I'm like, why do pets hate Allura so much? The appetite stimulant? I'm like, they always act like you're poisoning them. And so I took a little drip. And I put it on my tongue, and it was the worst thing I ever put in my mouth. And that's saying a lot.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. You know, we won't delve into that.
What was it like? Was it bitter?
It was bitter. It left like a poison taste in my mouth with a hint of vanilla, which was weird.
Hmm. It's odd that they would have an appetite stimulant that doesn't actually taste yummy. Like, that seems weird.
Yeah.
Every pet I ever go to, like, homes at the mouth, and I kind of was doing about the same. I was doing it in front of the practice manager, and she was like, what is happening? And I was like, this is my...
Maybe you could use it as a lick repellent.
On the leg. And I'll tell you, that drip didn't do anything to my appetite, so. It wasn't dope for me either, so. So, talking about ears, what kind of things cause ear infection?
Oh, well, it is such an important topic to get into, and I think that we can probably only touch the tip of the iceberg. I mean, it's so broad, but in general, you know, ears are kind of thought of as a self-cleaning machine. So you really don't have to do a lot to the normal dog's ears. But certain pets, maybe because of conformation, maybe more predisposed to ear infection. Like, for instance, a basset hound, because they've got these really long, heavy, floppy ear pinna. And that could predispose them to increase moisture, heat, humidity down in the ear canal, which would then lead to secondary infection. But not all basset hounds have secondary yeast infections in their ears, but it just makes it more likely. And you often will find them colonized with yeast as puppies. And if we don't do, you know, maintenance cleaning, or if we're not aware of that potential for developing overgrowth of yeast, and then sometimes it occurs, and then it leads to more issues down the road, and then they're prone to having chronic otitis after that. But I think for the cases that I see, the main reason for otitis is allergic disease, by far.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of what I see too, I think.
Yes, and then it gets complicated, you know, and then we get secondary changes to the ear canal, and then the infection should never go away.
No, I think a lot of times owners don't realize that the ear is the L shape. And so they do like a wipe right at the flap of the ear, and the bacteria is down in that little like groove where it's nice and dark and damp. So it's having a good time out there. You're not even touching it. It's having a party.
Not even touching it. I do think there is a lot of misinformation about ears on the internet, and just about the conformation, like the anatomy of the ear, what's normal, what's not normal. I have people that just clean the ears with a piece of toilet paper. I just rub the outside, you know, which is not going to be very effective at all. Or if they're using an ear cleaner, they're not using it as directed as often, or they're not filling the entire ear canal with fluid. So we usually spend a lot of time discussing how to properly clean ears. We have little ear models in the rooms, which I recommend. I think Elanco used to give those out, or you could ask, you know, different reps, but those are very useful, or at least like a picture of an ear so they can understand the anatomy is a little bit different. Because I think humans are taught, don't stick anything in your ear, you know, don't use Q-tips and, you know, the danger of like hitting the eardrum. So a lot of people are really afraid to put anything in their dog's ears.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to be. I wouldn't go digging around with the Q-tip, but you definitely get those ears flushed out for sure.
Yeah. Can I ask a question? Yeah, I said the ears are self-cleaning. Like, what is that? Like, what? How?
What does it mean? So like when, you know, obviously the ear canal, I always kind of describe it pretty simply to pet parents as a cartilage tube lined with skin. And of course, the cells that line that tube produce wax or cerumen. And over time, if you looked at the skin cells that are just adjacent to the eardrum, say you put a dye, they've done these dye studies, some lucky lab person, and they found that, you know, over time that will migrate out. The skin cells will migrate out of the ear. And then with that, the wax plug will actually just migrate over time out of the ear. So really, you don't have to do a whole lot to ears until you do. So once they start having secondary infection, it changes the size of the glands that line the ear canal, the number of glands. So they actually hypertrophy and produce more of this wax and debris. But then the ears don't self-clean anymore. They become more productive. And then you get all this gunk and material that's actually trying to treat the infection. You know, the ear is reacting to that inflammation and infection in the ear. And then it just becomes like this kind of whole circular thing where we've got an infected ear, an ear now that has too much debris in it. We've got to clean the debris out. We have to sort of stop that inflammation and hopefully eventually get the ear to a point where it's cleaning itself again. But sometimes that epithelial migration doesn't occur at the same rate ever again. So then people have to do maintenance therapy long-term on the ears, which is hard. And it's, you know, just something new that they may not be used to doing and they have to stick with it. So that's one reason why ear disease can perpetuate and be hard to cure.
Mm. Oh gosh, I can imagine. What breeds do you find to be the biggest repeat offenders?
Oh, the Cocker Spaniel. Lots of Cocker Spaniels. And not all Cocker Spaniels have ear disease, but once they start having it, like if they're allergic or a dog that has seborrhea and then they end up getting otitis, if you don't act fast, those ears just, they hypertrophy and like they get a lot of cerumenal gland hyperplasia. And then it just becomes a disaster. You know, they're often ones that we send for referral for TICA surgery. And the second breed to that, or maybe you could flip-flop them just depending on the week, is the English Bulldog. But are those two breeds are the ones that will have the most exuberant secondary changes to their ear canals that are not reversible, and then they end up in a surgeon's hands.
But you don't do TICA surgeries?
I don't, thankfully. Thankfully, they're hard. I mean, I have several friends that are board certified surgeons, and I don't think anyone loves doing a TICA because you're essentially removing the ear canal and it's mineralized and turned to bone, and there's no real normal anatomy anymore.
I saw one about 20 years ago.
I heard it's just a bloody bone and just, you know, the anatomy is not good anymore at all. So there is one dermatologist in Florida, Dr. Mike Canfield, who does do some ear surgeries like that. He does a little bit of a different procedure than the TICA, and he's very talented. So I try to send some of my cases to him, my snowbirds. I'm like, well, if you just happen to be in Florida, maybe you could go see Mike.
The beach is why you're here.
But yeah, thankfully, I don't have to do the surgeries. I try my best, though, to save my patients from having to go to surgery. And most of the time, if a pet parent's coming into me with their dog with chronic otitis, they want to save them from going to surgery. Like they're really trying their hardest. And so we'll kind of try to get a comprehensive plan to reduce the symptoms, to hopefully reduce some of the chronic changes. But once it's mineralized, that's kind of a point of no return. You can't really
change that anymore. So that's unfortunate, but we try our best to alleviate the symptoms at least.
For the listeners who don't know what otitis is, would you be able to explain that for them?
Yeah. So otitis is essentially inflammation of the ear, and it can be infection. It could be a sterile otitis. So you can have inflammation in the ear that's due to allergies where you don't yet have infection. It can be due to autoimmune diseases. You can have inflammation that's there that has no secondary infection at all. And then, of course, the most common things that we see as pet parents or as clinicians and veterinary technicians would be the yeast infection, the bacterial infections where you're seeing lots of debris in the ear, in addition to the inflammation that's ear. But otitis essentially is just inflammation of the ear canal.
Do you have ear infections?
They do. Our feline friends do get ear disease, but much, much, much less commonly. I think a lot of that probably is due to their conformation. They've got a shorter ear canal because they're smaller. And most cats, we can't forget about our Scottish Folds and the Highland cat. They have more chondrodystrophic ears, you know, where the pinnae are kind of folded down, the ear flaps are folded down. So those breeds, because of their conformation, are more prone to bacterial and yeast overgrowth because they've got little spinotic closed down ears. But most cats have nice upright ears, so they're less affected by secondary infection. But allergic cats do itch their ears, so that can be a problem. And cats can self-traumatize themselves very easily. So they'll scratch themselves until they bleed, and then, you know, they end up in a cone of shame.
I've got one of those.
You do? Well, no.
You're not the most excited about ear cleaning with the cat?
No.
Cats are not amused by much. I would say that the average patient in general, even a dog, doesn't like fluid being put in their ear. I mean, they're going to shake, and my dog runs when I even pull a bottle out to clean his ears. So, cats usually don't see the humor in any of that. But there's some real cool products on the market now that are helpful if you do have a pet that, especially for maintenance ear cleaning, if you have a pet that doesn't like a fluid or solution being put down in their ear canal, there's little finger mitts that you can get that are medicated to clean the ear canal. Vetnique is a company that has some of those, but that's kind of just a nice little tool that you can use. But that's more effective for the most part for patients that don't have a lot of infection in their ears or just trying to clean the ears out in an easy way.
Great suggestion. I would like to share with you our next review. Hey, who is our next review from Echo?
Dumbo.
Jumbo? You mean Dumbo?
So this is for an ear powder. It is just a basic Amazon brand ear powder. Nothing fancy, so you're not missing out on anything with the picture. It is one star from Dumbo, who I think has the biggest ears by far. I don't quite know why he needs ear powder, but we'll see. One star. This product says that it helps take the hair out of your dog's ears without pain. This did not work. I followed the instructions to the T, and my dog screamed bloody murder when I tried to pull the hair out. I will not be doing this again.
So how was the powder supposed to work? Just magic? You had to pull the hair, though.
Right.
Hair and then, yeah, like a hair powder.
Rumor we used ear powder, right? I didn't know you could just buy it off the internet for just anybody to use ear powder, but I'm...
When I was grooming out of a clinic, they had me use Neopredif powder to try make it a little easier for them.
We use that. I actually find it quite satisfying to do ear pluckings and woolly worms. I mean, it's therapeutic for a lot of these dogs, and probably... I don't know, maybe two or three times a year I see a doodle or a Lagotto Romagnolo, if you guys know what that breed is, the truffles can feed dogs. They're just very curly, you know, aggressively growing, hairy ear dogs. Like their hair just grows and grows. And they often come in with like clumps, mats of hair way down in their ear canals, and we'll sedate them and pull it out and get a nice, fresh, clean, open ear. And then usually two or three times a year we'll pluck the ears again. So I love doing it. It's fun.
I don't think as a pet owner, they should have tried to take this task on themselves. There's a reason this dog screamed, you know?
Yeah. It
hard to do. I mean, usually I have one or two friends holding the dog, and that's if we just have a little bit of hair to remove. If it's a major hair removal with clumps of debris and hair swizzled down into the ear canal, then we usually dare it.
It's fibs.
It is cool. Sometimes I'll show them like the little 4x4 or 3x3 gauze square with all the hair on it, and it's like massive amounts of hair that we've pulled.
Give it a little sniff, too. You're gonna be close, but you could. How gross. Oh my God. And then you're like, but I do that. But yeah, that's my favorite. I think the blacker the debris that comes out on it, the more you're like, yes, I fixed this.
And what's interesting too is that if you do cytology, you know, those ears that are impacted like that with all that hair and debris, a lot of times the cytology is pretty meaningless. Like you don't really get that much out of the ear initially. And then once you pulled all of that out, you realize all the yeast and debris is like hiding beneath. So it's kind of fun.
I think my advice to Dumbo would be go to a groomer or a veterinarian in the future to have the ear here taken care of, because you're also damaging that relationship you have with your pet, because you're going to be like, oh my God, you're going to rip my ear hair out again.
Yes. And you're running on a moving target. It's really hard to do. And we usually put a little bit of a steroid down in there, like things that you probably wouldn't have at home to help soothe the ear after the fact. So there's certain things that I think are better left to professionals. Another one of those things is expressing anal glands. People want to do these things at home, and I'm like, why?
Why would you want to do like one of the world's
dirtiest jobs at home? Just leave that up to the professionals.
Yeah, I had a recent post in like my neighborhood Facebook asking, is there a vet in the area that will come to my house to do my dog's anal glands? Because I don't want to pay vet prices anymore. And I was like, that's a bold question.
But you want them to come to your house to do it?
That sounds more expensive.
And you want all that stink in your house?
They're like, do it in their off time. I don't think I know one veterinarian that has off time and they're like, I want to go do some glands.
I'm going to go squeeze a butt.
Oh. That's a topic for another day, too. But you do a lot of boomo.
I do a lot of anal sac disease in our practice. And me and one particular staff member of mine, it seems like we attract all of those cases, usually on a Friday. Usually on Friday, because I like to do gland infusions. And you actually use an ear medication because it has a steroid and antibiotic and antifungal. Usually a really potent steroid, but we'll flush the anal sacs and then we infuse them when they're impacted and infected. And so I like doing it, but I don't. It's like a love hate, you know, because it's messy and there's a lot of poop involved. And I don't think I actually realized how much dermatologists deal with butts.
This is new to me too. What is the most bizarre object you found in a pet's ear?
Oh, that's a lovely question. So I once found in a cat a little tiny piece of what looked like wicker basket. It might have been wood. I mean, it was, you know, like you barely could see it. Like it looked like a tiny, very, very small, probably less than 2 millimeters, really tiny, down in this cat's ear. And it was an indoor only cat. I just could not understand how it got in there, you know, but I've heard of people's children having things in their ears, but usually the kids like stick them in the ear. Could never figure out how that cat got that in there. Foreign bodies in dogs are usually a little bit more simple. Usually it's plant material like grass awns, fox tails, sometimes just clumps of wax around hair, like hair that's gotten down the ear canal and then just creates kind of this ball of debris that's in front of the eardrum. I see that a lot. But the cat was real interesting to me. I think the other thing, the game we play is like, is there a tumor? Is there not? And how big is the tumor? You know, is it a polyp that'll be easy to remove, or is it something that's more aggressive? And you really just don't know until you get them under anesthesia and look down there with that video scope. So that's always fun to me.
I think one of my favorite parts to watch you do is when you would cut the tumors open to see what was inside of them. And sometimes you find like hair materials and stuff where it was like a pore or hair.
No, so follicular tumors will do that. And then the most visually pleasing type of tumor is a dermoid cyst. and it'll have like hair and debris and really, really cool. Really, really cool. And it's usually
congenital. Real gnarly stuff. I was like,
One little like unknown fact about me was that I did for a while want to be a surgeon. And when I was a student, one of my favorite things was, you know, when you had a dog that was presenting with gastrointestinal upset, we figured it had a foreign body. We take an x-ray. We see on the radiographs that there's, you know, some sort of object in the abdomen. But then when you open the dog up, then you see, you know, is it tiny or is it huge? And sometimes these things are ginormous. And then like finding out like, you know, is it a pair of underwear? Is it a toy? Or even tumors in the abdomen. Like, you have no idea really how big they are until you get in there. And I just being amazed at, like, how big something was is, like, puppy surprise for me. So this is kind of my version of that for non-surgeon.
Inside.
So I want to go over a few common myths that are out there about ears and see if we can bust them or if they're true.
Dime.
Nessie Nitham. Do both of those, can we?
We're going to demiss these men.
Ear infections are contagious.
False.
Good. That was an easy one. We're just warming up. All ear infections are the same and you'd be treated with antibiotics, oral antibiotics.
False. So the majority of ear infections actually are in the external part of the ear canal. So usually we treat topically. And systemic antimicrobials aren't really going to be too effective for those external ear infections. Usually I do oral antibiotics for cases that I have a confirmed otitis media or one that I suspect may have otitis media. And that can be more chronic cases or cases with inflammation in rods. Typically rods can lead to middle ear infections, but a lot of it's the duration and severity of the ear infection that would make you think that it's more internal or otitis media.
One of the doctors I work for thinks he can smell the difference between rods and yeast in the ear. So in the room to like get in these patients' ears and give it like a real big whip, that yeast, or she's like, that's Pseudomonas. And I'm always like, they do have a smell to them, but you should still probably do that.
Cytology. Yeah, I think two things. I do think that you should smell the ear to some degree, especially, you know, that's one of the things that I'll mention to pet parents who are doing maintenance cleaning and treatment of a dog that has gone into remission from a chronic otitis. So we know maybe this is an allergic dog and we've struggled with ear infections for many months or years, and I might have them on weekly ear cleaning. And one of the things that I'll ask them to do is when they're cleaning to take note of how much debris is in the ear, any redness, and if the smell of the ear is changing and becoming kind of foul. But it's not that I'm trying to ask them to diagnose the infection with their sniffer. It's just, you'll notice a stinky, funky ear. I think people will be able to tell that. And then that may mean either we increase our cleaning frequency or we get them in to the clinic, into the vet to make sure that we can identify that infection and treat it. But Pseudomonas does tend to have kind of a sickly sweet smell. It's very, very strong. And it's just once you smell it, like I do think you can sort of identify that. Yeast can smell a certain way, but it also can be bacterial. So it's not always complete. And sometimes it's a mixed infection. So it's always wise to do cytology just to know for sure. And I have had some really nasty ears that actually have been more nasty ulcerative ears with lots of purulent debris that actually is more autoimmune and there's not a lot of infection. So it looks and smells can be deceiving.
Can I ask, what is Pseudomonas?
Pseudomonas is a type of bacterial infection that when you look at it under the microscope, it's little rods. And Pseudomonas actually is the type of bacteria that causes swimmer's ear in humans. And those types of organisms are kind of ubiquitous. Like you can find them in water. So any kind of damp, moist area could potentially get a Pseudomonas infection. And the issue with Pseudomonas or these rod-shaped infections is that it can cause a lot of inflammation and cause surface erosions on the skin. So dogs that have Pseudomonas often have, when you go to swab their ears, there'll be blood in the ear canal. And they're usually really evil. Pseudomonas also produces biofilm, and that biofilm is kind of like a slime layer that protects the bacteria from antimicrobials.
That's one of the reasons why it's so hard to treat. But you can't identify Pseudomonas without a culture. So it's somewhat of a guess that the rods that I see on cytology in this really stinky, thick, yellow, exudative ear, you know, it's a guess in the clinic until you send it out for culture. But it's a really hard to treat infection.
Oh, yeah. They're gross. I saw as a groomer a cocker one time that came in for its haircut. And I went to do this ears, and I always shave the complete underside of cocker ears. And I wasn't, it smelled so bad when I lifted the ear, and there was black all under the ear. I called the owner and I said, there's something wrong with your dog's ears. You need to take him to a veterinarian. I can't do a groom on him today. Like, I won't proceed until you take care of the ear. And he goes, that's just the WD-40 I've been treating his ear infection with.
Where'd he learn that? Oh, shop class.
Just old country boy. I'm four, you know.
I mean, they used to talk about people using like motor oil to treat, I think, Demodex mites, like way back in the day, like all kinds of crazy things. I'm sure if you just kill the skin, you kill the mites. It was not the idea.
Well, they're known for it. I mean, in the South, we hear some things. I'm just going to hide. Farmer John down the road had this dog the one time, and he's still fine, so it must work. Yep. Apple cider vinegar can cure ear infection.
ID. We don't do it very often, but the idea of apple cider vinegar is it's very acidic, and the microenvironment of the ear canal, when an infection is present, that pH of the ear is usually more basic. And allowing the bacteria and the yeast to thrive. And if you acidify the ear canal with a cleaner, then that will discourage yeast and bacterial overgrowth. So there is some truth to apple cider vinegar being effective. I think straight vinegar in an ear that's inflamed could be painful and irritating. So if someone is going to use that to clean an ear, usually it should be diluted with water. But if you look at a lot of the cleaners, you know, there are acidifying cleaners that have more of a acidic pH, a lower pH to help to kind of change that microenvironment of the ear and discourage the overgrowth of yeast and bacteria. So that's actually a pretty good one.
It's interesting.
It's not my favorite thing to do, but if that's all you got, you could try it. Once the ear gets really infected, though, usually cleaning alone isn't going to be enough.
Mm-hmm. No. And the final one I have is plucking ear hair prevents ear infections.
Yeah, probably not. Some of these are kind of on the fence. In general, and that's a very controversial topic, is should we pluck, should we not pluck? And in general, if it's a happy, healthy dog that's never had ear disease before, the groomer can pluck the ears out. I'm thinking doodles, copper spaniels, things like that. The groomer can pluck the ears as needed when they go in and get their trims. But generally doing a sedated ear pluck, those aggressive ear plucks in a dog that's never had ear disease before, you probably don't need to do, because when you do those plucks, you do create a lot of inflammation. If we don't treat that inflammation, or if it gets out of hand, then that could actually lead to infection. So it's kind of the idea of if it's not broke, don't fix it. Some dogs are just fine with their little fuzzy, wuzzy, hairy ears. But if it's a dog that's prone to ear infection and you're noting that there's just so much hair in the ears, it's clumping down in the ear canal, you can't clean, you can't see, you know, they're getting bacteria and yeast down in there, then those are dogs that we will get them on a kind of a plucking routine. I have a Lhasa op, so I don't pluck his ears. He's never really had ear disease. The groomer plucks it, I think. You know, they're not super, super hairy, so we don't really do a whole lot for his ears preemptively. But if he were to start having ear infections, and I noted a lot of hair down there, then sometimes I would start to pluck it some.
Those are great. Actually, I really like your answer for that, because as a groomer, I was always like, you have to pluck ears. That's what we do, right? But then as I moved more into vet medicine, it's like, well, don't start if you don't really have to, you know? So
that's a good question I have for you. Like, when you do pluck, do you use hemostats to pluck, or do you just pluck the outside, like what you can reach?
Depending on the dog, if it's one that I knew was not great for, didn't like his ears plucked, I would just get a little bit of it with my fingers. I would put the powder in to dry the hair up and make it easier. And I just pluck a little bit with my fingers. Didn't get it all out, but some of it. And that said, it kept the dog happy, the owner's happy. But if there were those cases where it was a stinky ear in there. And it's like a poodle that's used to having hair plucked. I get my hemostats out and I get that little twirl on and pull out that woolly worm.
Yeah, I think a lot of those dogs do need it. And the one thing that I always counsel pet parents about is, you know, we just talk about it. If they feel like the dog head shakes the day after the grooming or, you know, 2 days after grooming, whatever, then I will send them home with a little topical steroid that they can use on grooming days. It's usually just a day or two afterwards and the dog is fine. If they're finding that they go to the groomer and then 3-4 days, a week or two later, the dog has an actual ear infection, then maybe those dogs shouldn't be plucked, you know? But a little bit of irritation is just like us. I mean, if you go and get waxed, it's not, you know, that creates inflammation. So it's, you know, that's to be expected. And so we just treat it, but it's usually very minor and nothing that really persists. But if it's leading to infection, you know, a week or two down the road, then I would probably stop the frequent plucking.
Yeah.
All right, pet friends, time to break up this irresistible episode for a quick break.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand, only from Pet Life Radio.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
I really have to plan when I wax my mustache because my lip will be so red and mad and people will be like, what? Like, everyone knows what happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was, I'm a child of well, I was not born in the 90s, but when I was plucking my and waxing my eyebrows, I mean, you know, we were obsessed with doing our eyebrows. Like, everybody's getting their eyebrows waxed. That's why they're still so thin. And, I got burned several times and then I ended up like, I stopped going because the wax, no matter if, even if it didn't feel hot, it would just really irritate my skin. And we looked crazy for days and sometimes it would get like gabbed. And so I started going to threading and then, you know, now my eyebrows just won't grow back. So I left it away. I mean, if you wax them and pluck them for 15 years and that's, you're now bigger brows are in.
I have mine covered with my glasses, so I don't really have to worry about them too much. If I'm going contact, I'll take care of the judibrow, but... All right. I think it's time for our next review. Who are you?
Darson, you gotta go with...
Oh, this is good. Okay, so this is a weird product name. It's called Stinky Stuff Ear Stuff. It's an ear cleaner.
I like the name. Okay, it's cute. I like it. Ear stuff, ear stuff.
I have a 1-star review here from Yoda. I would try to do a Yoda voice, but I think it'd be...
I don't think it's too much. I think you should go for it.
I would ruin it terribly. So, it's a 1-star. My dog never feels better with this. Don't spend money on this product. It is not working. I just put vinegar and clean his ears with baby oil and he's much better.
Baby oil?
Sea oil. Interesting toy.
What does that do?
Greases up the ear? I suppose, I mean, there are ear cleaners that are very oily because they contain squalene and it actually helps to break up wax quite a bit and pull that wax out of the ears. So maybe the baby oil had that effect.
Maybe she just wants the dog's head to smell like a baby.
I do like that though.
Yeah.
If that would be nice.
I just can't get past how messy she like gets that baby oil out. And I think she uses it like the ear cleaner, just fills the canal up and gives it a slosh around and then shakes it. And you've just got oil all over your dog. All over the kitchen or outside, wherever you're doing it. And then you're like, your husband comes home and lies across the floor and he's like, oh, it's old up to dog.
Yeah, the dog's ear cleaning has turned into a whole mess.
Work, girl, calm down. Not from.
I love the names of the products. There's so much out there. There's so much. I really, I actually don't mind for people to bring in all of the things that they've been using because I like to read it. And some of it's really interesting. You're like, okay, let me see, you know, the marketing and the pictures. And then you flip it over and the ingredients are like, meh. Like there's like actually nothing in it that would do any good work.
Water buckle.
Yes.
Well, marketing's
amazing.
Is this product like a liquid or a, like, what is it?
It says ear drops, so I would assume that makes it a liquid. I don't know.
It looks like quite a small bottle. The picture, at least, looks.
I think that's the biggest point about these products is you really have to know, well, one, what are you trying to achieve? Like, what are your goals with particular product? And then does it have any active ingredients?
$30 for a tiny bottle.
Oh, man. What if it's like your ophthalmic drop? Like,
one where you're just like,
I just don't know if $30 is worth that size bottle. I think we sell our medicated ear flush at $30 and it's a full bottle. So, yeah, I hope that's magical. You're paying for the cute name. So what are some best ways, if there are any, to prevent ear issues at home or signs that it's time to see a veterinarian?
I think the biggest way to prevent ear issues at home would be to recognize the symptoms of ear disease, you know, because we mentioned about ears mostly being self-cleaning machines. We probably don't need to do a lot of prophylactic plucking or cleaning unless the dog is prone to having ear infection. So the things that I tell people to look for is symptoms of ear disease. You might notice them scratching, head shaking, rubbing their ears on things, or if you as the pet parent, if you flip the ear flap up, you might notice discharge, redness, a bad smell. Also on allergic dogs, they may not have a lot of discharge in the ears, but along the medial aspect of the ear flap or penna, they can have redness, and then the lines of the, like the basic architecture of the ears will look very bumpy. They call it lichenification, but the normal lines and grooves in the ear will become really prominent. And so that's a subtle change that you see with allergic ears. So even if they're not infected, you'll notice that redness, those surface changes that could indicate that the dog's ear is uncomfortable or that they have allergic disease. And usually they have other symptoms of that, you know, paw licking or redness on the feet and belly.
What about if they go to like pet their head and they shy away and scream when you...
Yeah, head shyness. Yeah, that's a big one. They may yelp, they may cry. And some dogs just never really like to be touched around their ears. But a lot of times if that has changed, we're used to be able to rub their ears. And that, you know, we always talk about that with our pet parents when they have puppies, you know, get them used to us touching their feet and their ears and their face and all that stuff so that when there is a problem, you'll kind of note those changes. And then hopefully also you'll be able to medicate the ears because they'll be used to being handled in that way. It can be really challenging to do though in any dog if their ears are infected because they're so painful. My son gets ear infections after swimming now because he has tubes. And I mean, I can't even get the drops into his ears. And he's, you know, a child. And I can imagine what our pet parents struggle with when they have dogs and cats that have painful ears. I mean, it can be almost impossible to get those drops in.
Have you tried smearing peanut butter on a wig mat?
I do mostly to brute strength and bribery. You let me do this, you'll get, and then we just like hold them down.
That's the only technique I know to offer. It'd be safe beyond that. I don't know, girl.
He does like peanut butter. I should try.
A nice boob. He's trying to get the roof of his mouth.
It breathes.
It breathes on a spoon.
A great idea. I love the TikTok craze of people putting saran wrap on their heads and then peanut butter on it, and then they trim their dog's nail. Like, have you seen this video? Oh, it's terrifying. I actually haven't watched a full video all the way through because I'm afraid to see the video where the person gets bitten in the speak.
I get that. I do my own dog's nails and I trust my dogs, but when she wants to put her face in my face while I'm doing nails, I'm like, absolutely not. It only takes one. It's not gonna be today. So,
I was over there.
Oh yeah, it's so easy to click them. I'm like, there's just...
And I have two labs, so they're big kids, and it would only take one little bad judgment on her end, and my nose would be gone, and I like my nose, and I need that. on. I don't know how I keep my glasses on without it, so. Is it?
Goggles free.
Well,
you can get some doggles. The rec specs.
I would constantly do that thing where you flush them out with water to put them back on, like when you were flooding. That sounds like a nightmare. So, do you, in your opinion, think that ear cleaning does more good? And is there any home remedies that you would recommend? I guess we talked about the apple cider vinegar that you did, but...
Yeah.
That you would bring out amend it?
In general, I don't think you should do anything. I think if you're, unless your dog has ear disease, and if they are, you know, one of these prone to ear disease dogs that have been diagnosed by a veterinarian, in those cases, I really think we should get established with proper vet care and then have your veterinarian prescribe a routine cleaning management for you with a good topical, because it's so hard to predict over the counter if you're selecting the right things, because there's so much out there, and then that you're doing it right. I do think that I just don't think we should clean the ears unless they have a problem. I don't know if your dogs have allergic disease, but Labradors, sometimes you clean their ears, but there are Labradors that you don't have to do anything to their ears, you know, just dealing
one of each.
One that I don't ever have to do anything with their ears, like he rolls out in the dirt and I clean the little dirt out of the flap.
So I really don't recommend doing anything unless you really have to. And then once you have to, getting a prescribed plan from your veterinarian is probably the best thing to do. But, you know, there are some products out there that are safe and easy to use that aren't going to cause any harm that I think you could use. But it's kind of dangerous to say,
right?
Use it. People will misuse it. The other thing, I do think the finger mitts is nice because you're not going to oversaturate an ear. You can wipe out excess wax, clean the flap. You know, that's nice. I think people either over clean or they under clean ears. So there's no real middle ground. And it really is just dependent on how exudative the ear is with how frequently you need it.
Can I ask, because we were talking a little bit earlier about there's a lot of connection between eye disease and ear disease. I've had a couple of clients at this point say that yes, they have a history of, you know, ear infections or skin disease, but they started giving their dogs coconut oil and that has fixed it. Is that, like, is there truth to that? Is it like a placebo or
like eating coconut
oil? One of them did say they put coconut oil in the food. At least two said if they clean with coconut oil.
Yeah. So I think a lot of what we know about atopic disease or environmental allergies in dogs stems from what we know in human medicine. And there's a lot of focus on restoring the barrier function of the skin, which we do through essential oils and fatty acids. And so if we can make the skin more protective, add those lipids back to the skin, it can help to prevent allergic flare. So that is true. Adding an oil back or fatty acids, omega-3 and 6 fatty acids back into the diet can help to restore the barrier function of the skin orally, so from the inside out. And then topically, essential oils and fatty acids and lipids can help, ceramides can help to restore the barrier function of the skin topically. So there is some truth. Coconut oil in itself has been found to be antimicrobial, but to what degree is kind of, you know, that's loose. I don't know if we really know exactly. And it's somewhat impractical. So if you had a dog that had a skin infection, you're not going to slather coconut oil all over the dog because you're haired. And so then you just have a greasy dog. So it's just not really a practical thing to do. But I haven't heard of anyone really putting it in the ears. So that's interesting because it's so thick. It seems like over time it might actually become occlusive if I put it in the ear. But I a lot of clients do give it. I have heard people giving it orally. Usually it doesn't work well enough to prevent all of the allergic symptoms. Maybe it helps some, you know.
One time I read somewhere that coconut oil would help my hair and that you melt it down in the microwave. So I did. I put some in a bowl, melted it down, got me some gloves, and I just put it all in my hair. And I let it sit for like an hour. It was messy. It was gross. I went and washed it out. My tub was so slippery in that realm. Fell. Standing in it, and I was like, this is not worth it. And then my hair looked no different afterwards, and I was like, that was a whole waste of time. It's still just gonna be that. So yeah, it did not work for my hair.
You'd probably have to use it frequently.
After one time, I expected results.
I mean, also so heavy for the hair. Like, I think it would be.
It was not a good time. It was not worth the effort. If I didn't see magic right away, that would freak my routine. So that was a no. All right. It is time for our final review. And you guys are going to enjoy. I saved our best one for last. This is from a natural health specialist.
For people or for animals?
So she's again. He doesn't say. I went to her Amazon profile to do some investigating. I'm like, what kind of doctor are you? She doesn't say anything to ignite health. So this one's going to be good. It is for... who's our...
This one's from Bugs Bunny.
Bugs the Bunny. That's... I thought I put a cat... No. I'm hunting... Wet. No, that's Elmer Fudd. I don't know. He says things.
What's up, Doc?
Oh,
there it is.
Thanks, man. So this is called Otic Bliss Eardrops with Micro Silver BG. Looks nice and efficient.
I have high expectations now.
Sounds heaven. Take them down some. Bugs left us a 1-star review. It is called Offensive. Over-the-top fragrance, ! There's a lot of them. She's very mad. Bugs is very mad. I had to throw this away immediately and eat the cost. The smell is so strong and offensive, I couldn't use this product. All I wanted was a medicated eardrop, not lingering perfume. If you are scent sensitive, avoid this product. I had to put it in 2 separate Ziploc bags and then a paper sack while wearing latex gloves. Ridiculous smell. Nothing that should go in a dog's ear should smell like perfume ever.
Ah. So I'm actually familiar with that product line, actually, Pop Will. Yeah.
Have you had to read a biohack?
That's a... No, and I've used that product and dispensed it. Then... It's probably just she's sensitive to the smell, but Vetnik is the company that makes Glandex, if you guys are familiar with Glandex. I mean, it's a veterinary formulated company and they have veterinary advisors. I'm one of them, actually, but I haven't noticed it to have smell. Some of our cleaning products do have a scent because you want to, you know, make the ear smell nicer, but I wasn't aware that one was so offensive.
Bags, a paper bag, and latex gloves. It's basically a hazard at this point. Like, it's half chemical weight. So, I mean, if you haven't had that problem, boy, but does it have a smell to it at all? Or
not really. Not that I've noticed, but I'm going to go back and smell it. As I've outlined, yeah, I've tested most of the products. I haven't noticed that. There are some veterinary products that have essential oils in them, like lavender and things like that, that do truly have a very medicinal smell, to the point that, you know, the company will recommend like putting it outside for a day, like some of the fragrance collars that have essential oils in them, because essential oils are strong. I mean, they're you know, meant to be very fragrant. So, but that product, to the best of my knowledge, doesn't have any of that in there. So,
yeah.
Stinky.
Yeah, it was the best powered.
Before you could even handle it or throw it away, you put on gloves and you're like, one bag is not enough. And give me more.
Well, maybe she wanted to use it. She tried. And she tried to.
Yeah, I don't know. I could still smell it even between 2 bags and a burp. Yeah. Oh, man. I'm real sorry that happened, Bugs. Wait. Well, we are going to... put in a quick reminder here to check your pet's ears regularly for problems, especially if you notice them scratching. But don't get involved unless you need to, right?
That's right. Less is more in this instance, I think.
Is that the biggest takeaway you have for today, you think?
I think if it's a normal ear, it's a normal ear. You know, maintenance cleaning is really preserved for the dogs that have infection, that have allergies and these recurrent problems. And if it's a happy, healthy ear, you just kind of need to let it self-clean itself. You know, it's a perfectly made machine.
It was designed that way for a reason. They're doing what they need to do. It's okay. But do you want to plug any of your social medias or where people can find
them?
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to see more, you can find me on Dr. Joya, the Pet Skin Vet on Instagram, or Dr. Joya Griffin, DVM on Facebook. I also have a website, which is www.drjoyadvm.com. And of course, you can watch the show Pop Goes the Vet with Dr. Joya on Disney Plus.
I highly recommend you guys watch that show. It was so much fun.
Lots of fun, lots of laughs. I have a really funny crew I get to work with on a daily. We really enjoy it.
I'd love to meet them. They looked like a lot of fun. Anytime, and you're in Louisville. You had this dermatology intern there.
Dr. Jeff. He's boarded now. So at that time, he was an intern, maybe beginning residency. And then he finished his 3-year residency and he sat boards last fall. And he is now a fully boarded veterinary dermatologist.
Is he still with
you? He loved my torture.
F it. Yes, he loves new jokes. So we do. I will be doing some fun stuff coming up that you might see on my channels. But check me out on LinkedIn, on Instagram. Some fun things coming. Cool.
If you guys want to find any of our social media information, it's going to be in our show notes. I highly recommend you go look up Dr. Joya. She's a hoot and a good time. So watch. I made that weird. Stay tuned for her AI song at the end. It's also kind of fun. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Dr. Joya. Queen of weird pet skin stuff. From allergies to autoimmune disease, this vet is on the case. This skin issue will get you down and get your spirits in a slump. That furball is itching like crazy. Dr. Joya to the rescue. Is it yeast? Is it staph? Is it fleas? It could be all of the above. Oh, so don't give up, 'cause there's help on the way. A dose of her care and those hot spots will be gone.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.